This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Two Northwest Indiana lawmakers have each been named Legislator of the Year by the Indiana Emergency Medical Service Organization, which is known as EMS. And State Representative Mike Andrade of Munster and State Representative Hal Slager of Schererville were being recognized for efforts to try to expand Hoosier access to emergency medical services with a bill that Representative Slager introduced into the Indiana House. House bill, which is now House Enrolled Act 1112. And we have Representative Slager to talk about it. Thanks for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris.
Will you tell us the issues that came up? And I know that according to the information from the EMS Association, that a lot of this is going to take care of something that should have probably been done a long time ago, but never was. That is to say, how groups like EMS organizations are paid back by the federal government for their calls.
It's really quite astounding, the timeline it's taken for them to receive any kind of increase. It all has to do really with Medicaid reimbursement. And the association came to me because of my work in the past few years trying to resolve the Medicaid reimbursement for pediatric hospitals across the state line in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that impacted other markets, Louisville and Cincinnati. But that work gave me the experience that they were looking for to try to resolve this EMS problem. And what that was is that the reimbursement on a Medicaid call hasn't seen an increase from Medicaid since 1976. And because of this, they have gotten to the point where there is such low reimbursement, and of course, wages keep going up, that they're not able to hire people, they're not able to afford to have adequate response times to get the people in a timely manner.
I imagine this impacts not only the private ambulance services, but municipal services as well, doesn't it?
It does, but not to the degree. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the way we fund the HIP 2.0 program, which is the what we would call the Obamacare alternative in Indiana, is through a mechanism where we're able to self-assess and ramp up the federal portion of the Medicaid reimbursement. Keep in mind that Medicaid is administered by the states, but it's a partnership. The state reimburses about a third and the federal government two-thirds. And so we work together. And so it's that reason that we have to work with them, and with managed care being as it is, there's just been this constant desire to try to drive down costs, and here we were.
With this opportunity that you and Representative Andrade put together, and in the buildup you got through both the Indiana House and got approved by the Senate, which is now House Enrolled Act 1112, is this an opportunity not only to help the ambulance services with getting reimbursed through the Indiana Medicaid, but also, I suppose, to the patients as well, the people that actually get picked up by the ambulance crews, taken to hospitals or other healthcare facilities?
Well, that's really the point. It's a public safety issue. I mean, we've got longer and longer wait times to see an ambulance respond, and it's particularly an issue in Northwest Indiana where so many communities outsource their EMS services to private organizations, where, as we started to talk about before, the municipalities that have services, they have a mechanism to kind of ramp that up, much like the hospitals do from the federal government. But the privates didn't have that available. And to the EMS Association's credit, they were willing to self-assess and try to do it the same way. But because they're not a government entity, it becomes a much more complicated program to administer. And when we get into the cost difference between the fact was most of the agencies that were municipal or city or funded through the HIP program, they were in a much better place than just the privates. And so when we looked at the gap, what was the additional cost, not to sound cavalier, but it wasn't a significant amount more dollars to fund them adequately so that all the agencies are properly funded.
But I suppose it really comes down to that that the amount of money is going to help out, and it probably should have been changed, as you mentioned earlier, a long time ago. That would have probably lessened the impact in not only on patients who have to pay their share of the bill, but also on the companies that have to wait until they get reimbursed.
Yes, it's surprising that there weren't more people raising the red flag much sooner. Mm-hmm. But be that as it may, it came to our attention, and it came to our attention because service was failing.
Now, when the measure was going through the legislature this past session, what kind of reaction had you gotten from some of your colleagues, both Republican and Democrat, about making the changes possible?
Well, gasps, I would say. Most people had no idea, and of course, this really affected those who depend on Medicaid. I'm not talking about Medicare. I'm talking about Medicaid.
Right.
This is for those that need help. And those service areas that had a lot of Medicaid were especially affected. But it's surprising on how many people could be affected. Coming back to the pediatric issue, many parents have insurance, but not necessarily family coverage. So all too often, the children are using Medicaid, and you'd be surprised to know that about half of all Hoosier children depend on Medicaid.
My goodness, that's an alarming number to be sure, but it's understandable, like you say, that you have family members of income have low incomes, and they have to rely on these services to be able to take care of the bills, and in particular, if they have a young child that needs help and has to go to hospital for whatever reason, wherever it may happen to be, I guess, in Indiana or across the state line, as you mentioned earlier, that it's something that has to be paid for, to be sure. When did you find out from the Indiana EMS Association that you were up for, you and Representative Andrade were up for the award?
I guess it was a couple months ago or so. They wanted to make sure we were available on the date of their annual meeting. That was the first indication.
Yes, make sure you don't plan anything for that day. You'd come down for a dinner someplace. And,
right.
That's the way
right.
It goes. I understand that, to be sure. Well, congratulations, Representative Slager, and also congratulations to Representative Andrade for his work and yours in particular, helping create and sponsor the measure. House Enrolled Act 1112 has been enacted, and the new pay rate, we should mention, is going to take effect in July of 2023. So then I'm sure that the providers are going to be all ready for the changes when they have to do their billing eventually. But it's a good start to be able to get the word out and make the changes, expanding Hoosier access to emergency medical services. And State Representative Hal Slager with us, along with his colleague across the aisle, Mike Andrade from Munster, putting together and sponsoring, in Slager's case, Measure House Enrolled Act 1112. Thank you for being with us to talk about it.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you for helping get the word out that we're getting this straightened out.
You're welcome. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. For Meals on Wheels in Northwest Indiana, that means they're busy delivering 1,700 nutritious meals every day and a wellness check going on with it, with visiting with people here in Lake, Porter, Newton, and Jasper counties. But they're always looking for volunteers to help do a lot of the deliveries. And to find out about the next campaign coming up for volunteers, we have Charlie Masovi. He is the volunteer manager for Meals on Wheels. Charlie, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Oh, you're welcome. First off, let's do a quick refresher to people who are not familiar with Meals on Wheels. Tell us about Meals on Wheels and the important role that they play to many people here in Northwest Indiana.
Meals on Wheels is a not-for-profit entity providing nutrition to those in need right here in Northwest Indiana. And as you mentioned, the counties of Newton, and Jasper, Lake, and Porter counties in Indiana.
We know that it's a lot of work that's, of course, behind the scenes with people working there at the kitchens here in Lake County, helping put all those meals together that are going to be delivered. But it's the delivery that you're looking for the most help, I understand, here recently. And that's because you've added a number of clients and more meals, that means, too.
That is correct. The ever-increasing number of clients and meals that we are serving leads us to an urgent need for volunteer meal delivery drivers. We have an urgent need in Maryville, Hammond, Highland, Griffith, Hobart, Miller, Munster, Whiting, and Lakes of the Four Seasons. We also have a number of other routes that are also available. We are announcing our new spring campaign, Spring into Service. As you know, spring is a season of life as everything begins to bloom. So it's the perfect time to let your volunteer spirit blossom as well with Meals on Wheels.
I understand, too, that besides having folks that will be delivering meals to the clients around the region with Meals on Wheels, you also are looking for volunteer vans for some other things to deliver as well, too. Will you tell us about that?
Yes, we have a number of volunteer opportunities available here at Meals on Wheels. Other opportunities include van drivers, where van drivers, volunteers, would pick up our van, load it with the food containers, drive it to a designated drop-off pickup location, and then take the empty containers from the previous day and load them back on the truck, drive everything back here to our facility at Meals on Wheels. Mm-hmm. We are also in need of volunteers to pack our cold side bags and frozen meals, as well as people to stamp and code the bags according to various diet codes.
I think we should mention that besides the visits with the daily meals that are scheduled, like you say, you have these other meals that are set aside certainly for bad weather, although we don't see much of that during the summer months or the spring or fall, but you certainly do during the winter. And so there's a need to have people help out on that too, right?
Yes, we put together what we call our blizzard box or our emergency meal pack. And that goes out in the event that we cannot deliver, whether it is weather conditions, a power failure, for some reason that we are shut down. We make sure that each of our clients has a shelf-stable meal pack. Sometimes it's up to 5 meals that we give them absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
So in the event that we cannot deliver, they have a nutritious meal that will supply their needs.
So now that you're into the Spring Into Service campaign, looking for volunteers for Meals on Wheels in Northwest Indiana, you've got training opportunities as well to help get those people ready to go out there and help service. Can you tell us about the next series of training sessions coming up?
Well, first, we are now traveling out to the communities thanks to some of the relaxed COVID restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be at the St. James the Less Church, located at 9640 Kennedy Avenue in Highland, on Wednesday, June 1st at 10 a.m. Father Gregory has generously allowed us to use one of their rooms there so that we can meet a number of the local people in Highland, Griffith, and Munster, and find out if they would like to participate as a volunteer with us, and find out about all the other volunteer opportunities as well. Then we will have another driver training session here, along with our new app training, on Thursday, June 9th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right here in our Maryville facility, located at 8446 Virginia Street in Maryville.
When people come by, for example, for this the meal delivery and app training, what will they be getting when they come by there at the facility in Maryville?
Well, I'm going to give them a brief overview of Meals on Wheels and what we do, how we do what we do in regards to our delivery process and our wellness check, and introduce them to the app on their smartphone, should they have that. It saves a lot of time, the app. It really is convenient. And the best thing is that we can service our clients even faster, because any issues that pop up, we can take care of, because we see everything that's inputted into the app by the volunteer on our dashboard on our desktop computer. So we see everything in real time.
I imagine this is the opportunity that folks that are volunteers helping deliver meals for Meals on Wheels and meeting with the folks that have asked for the meals to check up on them, because I know that's always an important part of the service.
Yes, that sets us apart from a number of other delivery service or meal services in the area. We do a wellness check so that we can always do a complete overview of the client. Besides their nutritional needs, we can look out for them if they have any physical needs, physical changes that need to be alerted to their emergency contacts or to the emergency services themselves. A number of our clients, you can be a self-pay client or receive funding through NICA, which is Northwest Indiana Community Action, and we can then suggest that they revisit the client. Perhaps they're in need of some repairs in their home. Maybe they now need to use a walker, or if there is some medical emergency that they need to be aware of.
If anybody has questions about the training sessions coming up here, the opportunities to learn more about Meals on Wheels, where can they find out?
Well, they can call me directly, Charlie, at 219-756-3663, or email Charlie, Charlie, at mownwi.org. We hope that the community will come out and help those in need on Wednesday, June 1st at 10 o'clock at St. James Celeste Catholic Church in Highland, or Thursday, June 9th at 2 o'clock right here at our Maryville facility.
That's Charlie Masovi. He is a volunteer manager for Meals on Wheels in Northwest Indiana. And as always, Charlie, thank you for being with us and passing on the information, as well as telling more people about the importance of Meals on Wheels here in Northwest Indiana.
Thank you so much.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Our next guest was in Chicago last weekend for the annual Windy City Summit, and he spoke about the current gridlock in trade, goods, and other items that are affecting the economy. We're speaking about Abby Omodenbi, who is the Assistant Vice President and Senior Economist for PNC Financial Services. And he is with us today with an update. And Abby, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, first, how are U.S. consumers doing these days? Retail sales data came out earlier this week. Are folks holding back on spending given the high inflation?
So consumers are clearly concerned about the U.S. economy. Consumer sentiment is at a decade low. Consumers are concerned about high prices across the board, so high gas prices, high food prices, and they're also concerned about the Fed increasing interest rates. And consumers are also worried about a recession. But what we've been seeing from the data is that households are still spending at a solid pace. Retail sales data for April, which was released on Tuesday, that came in better than expected. So despite the declining sentiment, consumers are still spending at a solid pace. With that being said, we're likely to see a decline in the pace of spending through 2022. I think it's only a matter of time before high inflation and higher borrowing costs starts to weigh on consumer spending. So we're likely going to see less spending on discretionary goods and big ticket items as high inflation and also the higher borrowing costs weighs on consumers.
Housing market has been on fire during the pandemic. Are we seeing a slowing in activity given the rising mortgage rates these days?
Housing sector has been on a tear during the pandemic, mainly due to very low borrowing costs and also due to remote work. We've had lots of folks relocate from big cities and move to suburbs. So there's been an increase in demand for single-family homes. Mortgage rates have increased sharply this year. So the average 30-year fixed mortgage rates is over 5% now. It was below 3% for most of the pandemic. So we're seeing slower activity in the housing sector. So we're seeing lower levels of new construction. We're also seeing lower levels of sales. And I expect that trend to continue through 2023. I think that we're likely to see mortgage rates rise even higher than the current level. And, that will result in slower housing activity over the next year.
Now, since you just mentioned the fact that we have remote workers in big cities that are moving out of those big cities, how about the regional housing market? How does it look?
Yes. So we're seeing that same narrative play out regionally, right? Mm-hmm. So we've seen lots of folks moving from Illinois, from Chicago. They're moving into places like Gary. And we've also seen very solid house price growth in the region. Taking Gary, for example, house prices are about 30% above the pre-pandemic level. So many folks are taking advantage of remote work, and I think that, you know, it's very likely that, you know, remote work flexibility remains going forward. You know, I think it's very unlikely that we go back to the pre-pandemic working arrangements. And I think that bodes well for the region. We've also seen many companies, you know, relocate into the Northwest Indiana region. The University of Chicago Medicine is building a major medical facility in the region. That's good for the regional economy. So, you know, we're going to see continued positive migration trends into the region, which is going to be very good for the economy.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Abby, to close things out today, what are your thoughts about the U.S. economy? Are we headed toward a recession this year?
Now, that's a great question, Chris. Lots of folks are concerned. Consumer sentiment is at a decade low. But I will say this, the Fed has a very difficult task ahead. We've been seeing high inflation numbers, the highest numbers since the 1980s. And we're also seeing very strong headwinds from the Russia-Ukraine crisis, from lockdowns in China. So the Fed has a very, very difficult task. But we don't expect there to be a recession in the next 2 years. We think that there will be some pain in some sectors. So interest rate sensitive sectors like housing and business investments, we're likely to see some challenges there as the Fed increases interest rates. But we think there is a 30% chance of a recession in the next 2 years. It's not our base forecast. You know, so we think that there will be above average economic growth this year, and there will be a slowing in growth, but we don't expect the U.S. economy to tip into recession.
Abby Ombudambi is an assistant vice president and senior economist for PNC Financial Services, and he joins us on Regionally Speaking to talk about the regional as well as the national economy. And as always, Abby, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Chris.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. A new location has been finalized for Lake County's World Wars I and II and Holocaust Memorial. The Crown Point Board of Brooks approved a 99-year lease with the Friends of the Veterans Memorial Parkway, allowing the memorial to be placed at Sowerman Woods Park, and it replaces the space previously set aside near the Crown Point Sportsplex. Mitch Barloga is the president of the Friends of the Veterans Memorial Parkway.
We're very proud of this. We believe the site that we are receiving is going to be a much more fitting location for such a solemn memorial, memorializing the 1,200 soldiers that died in Lake County alone from World War I and World War II.
Barloga said it will consist of monuments and memorials around a pond with a pavilion at one end containing the names of those who died.
You have to keep in mind that World War I and World War II are a continuous story. Hitler figured out the Holocaust in the trenches of World War I. And that brings us, of course, to the end of that terrible conflict in 1945. And we want to tell that story. And we also want to tell the story of the Lake County veterans who served.
Former Crown Point Mayor Jim Mitros is happy the project is finally moving ahead, saying that World War II touches everyone.
The sacrifice that's been made for this country has been tremendous. And it's our job now to honor that sacrifice. And what a great thing, a great responsibility that we have.
Barloga said the goal is to get the design done this year and complete the memorial in the next 2 to 5 years. Plans for a new roundabout at U.S. 231 and 113th Avenue would provide direct access to the Sowerman Woods location. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. And for this week, I'm Chris Nolte. Our thanks to State Representative Hal Slager, to Charlie Masovi with Meals on Wheels of Northwest Indiana, and to PNC Financial Services Group Assistant Vice President, Senior Economist Abby Omo-Dunby for being on the program today. And we'll be back with you on Monday.